James is at Spirit Rock right now teaching the February month-long retreat, but he's also teaching his Awakening Joy retreat. And some of you may even be in it. And their topic was intention. This is the time that they just did last week. This is the time of year where intention is more on our minds than other times of year. Sometimes we just had the Lunar New Year too. However, in Buddhism, intention is a practice in and of itself. It's an understanding that it permeates everything we do all the time, and that with mindfulness we can become conscious of it, and then also become conscious of when our intentions are serving our well-being and when our intentions are undermining our well-being. In fact, intention is so important that the Buddha singled it out as the point in our processes of sort of birthing new action. It's the point at which we create either suffering or peace for ourselves. He said, intention, I tell you, is karma. So to explore this further, I'd like to begin with a story. In the late 1990s, I was on tour with a folk trio that I was in from 1993 until 2009 called Rebecca Riots. We were a feminist folk trio. We spent a lot of years on the road touring. We recorded 5 albums. I was living the dream, but as you may know, living the dream also means, you know, the gritty realities. You know, when you live your dream, it turns out it's still also just life. So at late 1990s, it was Thanksgiving time, and we were in a van on the East Coast on tour, and I had dropped off one bandmate at her sister's house, and the other bandmate at her girlfriend's grandmother's house, and I was on my way to my cousin's house, and I got lost. And this is before the days of GPSs and cell phones. So I had a paper map, wasn't really that familiar with the East Coast, trying to find my way to my cousin's house. And I ended up going out of my way by about 6 hours, driving through some extra states, which you can do when you're in the East Coast. And for some reason that I no longer recall, there was only one cassette tape in the van with me. And it was a cassette tape of Thich Nhat Hanh talking about how the mind is like a garden. And so I just listened to it over and over, and I never got bored. And his teaching is that it's the energy of intention that allows us to plant seeds of beauty and nourishment, you know, zinnias or tomatoes, or, you know, we can have intention, you know, harsh intention that can create weeds, harsh or just diluted intentions, or intentions around craving that actually increase suffering. And so Thich Nhat Hanh talks a lot about the mind being like a garden, but on that tape, that was all I listened to for hours and hours and hours, and it really sunk in. A quote from Thich Nhat Hanh from this cassette tape: inside every one of us is a garden, and every practitioner has to go back to their garden and take care of it. Maybe in the past you left it untended for a long time. You should know exactly what's going on in your own garden and try to put everything in order. Restore the beauty, restore the harmony in your garden. If it's well tended, many people will enjoy your garden. And it's not only that as we work with intention, we're essentially working with our minds and hearts and habits so that we are more able to be of service and more able to connect deeply with others, but also that it creates peace. It creates inner peace as we learn to work skillfully with intention. But whether we work skillfully with intention or not, intention is there. So I invite you now just to take a moment to reflect. What intentions typically come up for you during a day? So there could be, intentions to be comfortable, which is fine. Intentions for, earning a living or surviving essentially. What else? It could be intentions to be happy. And there can also be, intentions can rise up of tuning out, the desire to tune out. Reactive intentions around them. Feeling like we need to continue the argument, kind of thing. These are all human and natural. Just noticing that there are intentions and then reflecting that it's possible to actually that intentions are malleable, that even though we can have deep habit patterns around intention, that it's actually possible to work with them. In the dictionary, the definition of intention is a determination to act in a certain way, like resolve, or what one intends to do or bring about. So, most of the time, intentions are unconscious and they've been set in place by what we've experienced. And even intentions can be set in place by our biology. Sometimes the limbic system, which runs the fight, flight, and freeze response, takes over or influences intention. But intentions can also be conscious. Oh, choosing intentions that bring you ease, like gratitude, self-compassion, even your intention to show up here tonight, a really rare and beautiful intention to be in community or practicing awareness, a really skillful intention for well-being. Every spiritual tradition offers prayers and meditations for setting wise intention, so Buddhism isn't unique with this. May the words of my mouth and the dedications of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. May every activity be a prayer. May my heart freely offer loving kindness and forgiveness. The Jewish tradition uses hundreds of prayers throughout the day to foster intentionality, awareness, and connection. And in times of difficulty, the repeated setting of intention, like setting a compass, can make a significant difference in our well-being in that day. So before we speak or act, it's possible to bring to mind an intention. Well, may I be patient. May I listen deeply, as Thich Nhat Hanh teaches. May I listen deeply. Like gardening, working with intentions isn't something, and really, like all of these practices, working with intentions is not something that we can do like in a one-day workshop. It requires repeated attention and care. To take a good care of a garden, we have to continually be out there watching and tending and weeding. So it takes effort, but it's really worth it. One of my teachers, and perhaps one of your teachers, Gil Fronsdal, often likes to use the description of how a line will be going in space in a certain direction forever. And that's how our habits can be, like they just repeat. But if we begin with this work of shifting our intentions, even a little bit, may I be more generous? May I practice truthfulness? As we work with these intentions, the change in our present habit may seem microscopic, but the trajectory of our lives changes direction. Like the line that had been going straight ad infinitum suddenly is going a different way. And the teaching in Buddhism is it changes the direction in the it changes direction towards greater well-being. Or another simile, intention is like the breath in meditation to which we continuously reorient our attention. The Buddha said, with our thoughts, we make the world. So the Buddha taught intention as one of eight essential practices for freedom. It's the second in the eight steps on the Eightfold Noble Path. And in Pali, it's called Sammasankappa, which literally translates as right intention or wise intention, because really we can have any intention, but the intentions that lead to freedom are well informed. The first step on the path, the one that precedes intention, is wise understanding. And that wise understanding is knowing that clarity, the clarity that we cultivate with mindfulness, the clear seeing, what's happening right now, seeing through the veil of thoughts and conditioned experience, what's happening right now. Clarity, and then the other big one is kindness or compassion, the capacity to care, to bring loving, caring energy to ourselves, to our experiences, to each other, to the world. So wise intention is informed by wise understanding, right intention. And it can be this large, overarching intention guiding our life, or it can be the tiny intention that's informing you when you shift in your chair. So it has a huge breadth of size, intention can. On the large end, an aspiration is a strong desire to achieve or move in the direction of something. May I be happy? May I lessen the suffering in the world? The teaching in Buddhism is that open-hearted states and actions like compassion and patience and kindness and appreciation are the ground of well-being. So anytime we set a large aspiration, that has one of these kind of open-hearted qualities to it, we're moving in that direction of well-being. And just a side note that I'm sure you've heard before, but it's worth repeating. The Buddha didn't ask us to take this on faith. You can try it and see for yourself. Like setting an intention, like waking up in the morning, for example, and having an intention, may I be compassionate with myself and others today? And then if you remember at the end of the day, checking back and see what it was like to have that intention in the driver's seat. The teaching is, and what you need to see for yourself is true, is we feel better. We feel better when we have those kind of open-hearted intentions. The Dalai Lama has famously said, "My religion is kindness." I'm seeing the relationship between kindness and freedom. So there are these large, beautiful, aspirational intentions, and then down at the micro picayune level, intention shows up as volition. This generally unconscious, but not necessarily unconscious because we have the tool of mindfulness. But generally unconscious intention that precedes each action. A Buddhist teacher, acquaintance of mine, colleague of mine from Germany, told a story about being on retreat in Burma. The Sayadaw, or teacher of the retreat, told her, "You should focus on intention." But there she was, you know, those retreats, they're like a spirit rock on steroids. You get up at, I think, 3:30 in the morning, and then breakfast is also really early. I think we go sit, and then I'm recalling this because I did 8-day retreat. She was on like a month or 2 month retreat there, but you go sit at like 4 in the morning, and then breakfast is at 5, and then you sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk. Lunch is at noon. That's it for eating. No more eating. And then you sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk. The Dharma talk is in the afternoon, and then sit, walk until 10 at night. And her teacher said, focus on intention. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't one of those things where there was a lot happening besides her practice. So she focused on her walking meditation, bringing her attention to what was happening in her mind right before she lifted her foot to step. And with mindfulness, she was able to catch the intention to lift the foot. And you may have had this experience as well. It's really noticeable if you look for it. It's just not some kind of thing we would usually look for. The intention to lift the foot, to move the foot, to place the foot. And then beginning to see all these other intentions surrounding that, the intention to practice clear seeing and to be mindful of sensation. And what she noticed was the well-being that would arise from these kind of very small, simple, apparently neutral intentions around clarity. And we can do that when we taste, when we look out the window in the morning. You know, any moment can be a moment to see what is the intention that's there. And with that clarity of seeing, when we do see a reactive intention, like I'm going to get all this cereal down, before my spouse comes to take the rest of it, you know, or whatever it is. If we notice the intention that's preceding the action, we can feel that reactive intentions have suffering associated with them, and open-hearted intentions have peace associated with them. James Beres, our other teacher here, once said, "If you're not choosing intention, conditioning will." So whatever habits we've developed from our childhood and beyond will be our response to whatever's arising next, unless we intervene with mindfulness and choice, which we can do. I once heard Jack Kornfield say, "Most conditioning is pain." It's just something to reflect on whether that lands for you or not. But certainly there's so much conditioning that doesn't actually serve well-being. All the training we get in our culture about happiness lying in material acquisition. Mindfulness shows that not to be true. In fact, simplicity leads to greater happiness. That's the whole teaching of renunciation in Buddhism. So with mindfulness, we get to see for ourselves what's true and then adjust intention accordingly. I was jotting down some of the intentions that I've had, or people that I've known have had, that were reactive and not really serving happiness. Some of them will be, you will, you know, that we can have towards each other, or that authority figures have had towards us. You'll change for the better if I'm cruel to you. Which we can then internalize to, I'll change for the better if I beat myself up. Those are two really common beliefs fueling many, many intentional actions that do not lead to happiness. I'll be happy if I get this or that excessive material thing at someone else's expense. Very common. I'll be happy if I do this or that unethical thing, or this or that unhealthy thing. There's a lot of short-term relief in a lot of unhealthy or unethical things, unfortunately, but in terms of the trajectory of a life, when we move towards things from a reactive place like that, we add to our own suffering and the suffering of others. So we use mindfulness to notice intention. And then we work with a lot of patience around planting new seeds in the garden and intentions of wholesomeness. Gil Fronsdal says, intentions are consequential. When we act on them, they have impact in the world. Whether we act on them or not, they have internal impact on our mind and heart. They contribute to our mood and to the quality of our mental life. So, specifically, the Buddha taught three wise intentions that we can practice. There are many, you know, there are many wise intentions as there are moments. But three general sort of umbrella intentions that the Buddha laid out as sort of reliably helpful are translated as renunciation, goodwill, and compassion. The Dalai Lama said, if you develop a pure and sincere motivation, intention, motivation. If you're motivated by a wish to help on the basis of kindness, compassion, and respect, then you can carry on any kind of work in any field and function more effectively. So, meaning that these wholesome intentions support our general functionality, confidence, and ease. So, the first one, the word renunciation, I find that word a little strange. It smacks of monastic life, which is beautiful, but certainly not for many people. And most of us are not imminently giving up our possessions and becoming monastics. So for me, when I think of renunciation, I think of letting go and letting be. Letting go and letting be. So definitely simplifying, but with material stuff is supportive of ease when we're not overwhelmed with stuff or with activities. There's just more room for that peace that we crave. Again, this goes directly in opposition to our culture's constant demand for productivity and equating worth with busyness. So again, we have to explore for ourselves whether this lands as true. But having a little bit more spaciousness in our lives and in our eye, in our view, you can see for yourself, but in my experience, it does bring more peace. So letting go of the false belief that we need lots of people and experiences to be a certain way in order to be happy. So letting go also means letting go of control, letting go of controlling what was never in our control anyway. Other people, many situations on the world stage and even in our neighborhoods. Just setting down our struggle, doing what we can, taking compassionate action, and then letting go and letting be. So that's renunciation, letting go. And then the second wise intention that the Buddha teaches is goodwill, loving kindness, friendliness, bringing kindness to ourselves and others. So it can be a small, just moment of smiling at a grocery clerk, or it can be a large life decision, how we're directing our own path. But the general sense of goodwill and friendliness. I personally find it neat that so much present-day neuroscience corroborates these ancient teachings. And one of the things that I find very interesting is that the medial prefrontal cortex, which is right here in the front of our heads, is the part of the, it's called the noticing brain. It's the part of brain that we activate when we're practicing both mindfulness and friendliness. And unlike the left hemisphere, which can language and has our working memory, the medial prefrontal cortex is directly connected to the amygdala, which is the part of the brain that holds emotional memory and is on the lookout for danger. So whenever we're activating mindfulness and or goodwill, we are bringing on board this part of the brain that's connected to emotional regulation and the danger signal. So we're creating soothing a neural soothing connection directly there, whereas the languaging brain on the left side that can talk up a storm is not directly connected to the amygdala. It doesn't really, we can have insights, but we don't have whole body emotional shifts towards peace and freedom. So there's a really powerful correlation between practicing goodwill and experiencing peace. It's what the Buddha taught, and it's what MRIs are showing. And then related to that, the third, so we've got letting go and goodwill, and then the third wise intention that the Buddha taught was compassion. So compassion is basically loving kindness or goodwill when it meets suffering or stress of any kind. And we can practice this together right now if you like. You can try this with me now. You can bring a hand to the heart, another hand to the belly. And just notice. All that's happening here is we're bringing a warm, soothing touch to our bodies. But because of the reality that every human body carries some degree of stress through a day, just bringing our hand to our heart and our belly is a gesture of compassion. It's friendliness meeting, some whatever degree of stress you're carrying right now. And because we're human as a group of people, we have all different levels of stress here. Just meeting it with care. And this simple intention of compassion can be, just as brief and simple as what we're doing now. It's also, this giant, beautiful energy that if any energy is going to save the world, this and clarity would be it. It's giant. It can guide your whole life. So the Buddha taught those three: letting go and goodwill and compassion as three reliable, wise intentions to practice with. The Dalai Lama said, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. Okay, so the end of the story about that I began with, where I was in a van listening to 6 hours of Thich Nhat Hanh's cassette tape on how the mind is like a garden. Is that I ended up at my cousin's house, and he wasn't there when I got there, but he left me a key. So I sat down and wrote a song, and the song is called Gardener, and it's about intention and about how the mind is like a garden, and also about, perseverance and hanging in there and patience. And boy, to be on this path really requires perseverance and hanging in there and patience. Because we set these intentions and then our old habits whoosh right through and take over, over and over and over. And then we come back. It's a returning practice. We come back again, come back to the cushion to meditate. We come back to wholesome intention. And then whoosh, we get blown off track by some, whatever difficult phone call or something. And then come back in. And that's, in my experience, years. but it's worth it. It's worth it because of that incredible change in direction that happens with our lives as we do these practices. So that's what the song is about. And I'm going to see if I can put the lyrics in the chat for you so that when I'm singing it, if you want to, you can read along. No, it doesn't like for me to put a lot of words in there, so I'll share my screen. Okay. It's really hard not to go where my whims urge me to go, but I know what sort of person I'm longing to become. If I want to help anybody in the world before I die, if I want the suffering all around us to subside, I have got to be more conscious of the things I do and don't do. Every little seed in time will flower. Plant the ones that lead me down a path toward really helping. I am the garden, but I'm also the gardener. In this very moment, I reap fruit from choices past. Choices for the future are made now. Certain habits, deeply rooted, flourish in the heart of me. Repetition, like the seasons, comes naturally. Some of it's good, some of it's not. Right now, this is all I've got, but it doesn't mean it's all I'll ever be. Choosing which part of me to act from is easier when I know what I want to become. I am the garden, but I'm also the gardener. Seeds is more subtle than it first appears. It's not just about some money to the homeless man. It's about perceiving what's happening in this very moment, then deliberately choosing to extend love. It's really hard not to go where my whims urge me to go, but I know what sort of person I'm longing to become. If I want to help anybody in the world before I die, if I want the suffering all around us to subside, I have got to be more conscious of the things I do and don't do. Every little seed in time will flower. Plant the ones that lead me down a path toward really helping. I am the garden, but I'm also the gardener, yeah. Thank you for your kind attention. So First of all, I want to open it up if anybody has any questions or comments or thoughts or sharings about intention. Just love to hear from you. Okay, and keep percolating. And if anything comes to you, put up your little blue hand. What that will do is the little blue hand is in reactions, maybe down at the bottom of your screen, or it might be if you go to your name under participants and click more, you'll find it there. In the meantime, I want to ask you a question. I've gotten feedback, James and I've gotten feedback for many of you, it would be very nice to go into small groups so that you can get to know our Sangha brothers and sisters and siblings here. And I really would love to support that and facilitate that. Some of that happens naturally when we got to meet live, little opportunities to meet people and say hello. And that just doesn't happen on Zoom. The only way to make it happen is in small groups. Or we hear each other ask questions sometimes, However, what we've found is that when we offer small groups, like a huge portion of you leave, just leave. And I think that's because you're introverted. So I want to offer to you to put you into small groups. However, I really want to encourage you to stay. So my question is, would you like to go into a small group? And the prompt question would be, what's an intention that you might like to work with? And you could introduce yourself, say where you're from, and then have a little conversation. Wendy?
Well, I do have a question about your talk, but
Okay.
just responding to your last thing, maybe all the people who don't want to be in a group could be in the same group.
Yeah, well, James and I talked about that. Definitely, if you don't want to be in a group, you don't have to, and you can stay here in the main room.
I was kind of joking, but
Yeah. But I mean, it's
groups, I
true.
don't want to be
Yeah.
in groups. But I personally like groups. I think it's a really cool opportunity to get to know new people. And, most of us are kind of shy about talking in a big group, but in a small group, it's much easier to talk. So that was my input on that. If you want the other question, I could ask it or I can wait.
Go ahead, ask your question, and then we'll see if we have any more feedback about groups and maybe drop into groups briefly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm really intrigued with this idea about, like if you don't set an intention, there's still your conditioned intention. Like, I think most people kind of don't intentionally think about an intention.
Right.
And so they're just, we're just going about our day,
Right.
so to speak. But and then I guess that's the conditioned intention. I'm a therapist with children, and I work with teens, some of whom are suicidal.
Yeah.
Had a suicidal teen today. I mean, she's not actively suicidal, but she doesn't want to live. And so when you're talking about intention, I'm like, oh my God, like what, is that her intention to not live? I mean, I can't believe that's your birth intention. I think your birth intention is to live.
Yeah, well, the Buddha teaches about
How would I work her on intention?
Well, in that particular, for a couple different things. One is the Buddha teaches about these intentions that are sort of innate to us. One is the intention to be, or to be, which it meaning like to be alive. Like all living things have that initial intention, but also it can become much more unwieldy, like the intention to create, the ego creates, and then the intention to create an ego and to keep that that sense of self or ego intact with lots of stories about the self, and it can become quite unwieldy. And then there's also the intention to not be, which can look like suicidality, for sure. can also be just our aversion towards things like, well, I don't want to be that person's housemaid anymore, you know? And, you know, so it can be anywhere from mundane all the way up to deadly. But these are sort of universal intentions that can arise from time to time. In the case of working with somebody who is feeling like they don't want to live, and if we have some opportunity to support intention that will be of use, I again would refer back to compassion. So teaching ourselves, first of all, because there's going to be secondary trauma even working with patients like you're describing, Wendy. So definitely embodying ourselves, first of all, self-compassion, and then conveying that to others. Take a breath, feel your soles of your feet. Bring a hand to your heart or wherever else is supportive. Just feel the hands, you know, and coming back to care, you know, because that intention to not be often can be arising because it seems like the best way to feel no pain, but really the best way to deal with pain is to encompass it in care. And that's a learning we all could deepen in. Mathea.
Well, you just now took what I was going to say, that yeah, I can vouch that there's a very strong natural intention to avoid angering if you had a kind of a ranting parent or something.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, so with mindfulness, we can bring these intentions into consciousness, first in our own minds, and then support, you know, resourcing others and then supporting them to see their intentions and working skillfully with them so that they are cultivating intentions that will help them be happy. Yeah. Okay, we don't have a lot of time, but we can take a stab at groups. So you're not required to go in the group. If you stay, you only have to stay like 8 more minutes, and we'll sing a dedication of merit at the end. So I encourage you to stay, whether you go in group or not. I do encourage you to go into a group. Everybody here is lovely. Breakout rooms. Okay. You should see a little thing on your screen that you can click to go off into a breakout room, and I'll call you back. Discussing intention, talking about your name and where you're from.
We have about 6 minutes or something, or
Yeah.
five. Okay.
Okay, and for those of you who are still here, I'm happy to lead us in a little meditation because we do love that, or we wouldn't be here. Or unless anybody who's here has any more questions or comments.
I have a question.
Okay.
I'm not sure I understood the differences between, for example, compassion and goodwill. And I was wondering if you might tell us more.
For sure. So goodwill is a general friendliness. And it's sort of just like the wish that beings be happy and safe. You know, it's it's generalized to all states, all beings and all states that beings are in. Compassion is very specific. It's the same energy, but it's specifically pointed towards pain, suffering, stress of any kind. So there's a really beautiful imagery that was described by a Buddhist monk in Burma. He said, when the sunshine of goodwill meets the rain of suffering, the rainbow of compassion is born. So compassion is a particularly powerful form of goodwill because it takes courage to stay present and not abandon pain. And so we're present with pain, with compassion, we're present with it, and we're loving with it. We're caring. So goodwill is beautiful, and we need it. It's the befriending energy of compassion, you know, but we can be befriending to each other whether or not we're in much pain, you know what I mean? Is that helpful? Did that clarify it a bit?
What might an intention be along those lines?
Well, around goodwill, an intention might be, may I practice friendliness with myself and others.
Where I live in New Mexico, that is so easy.
It's not wonderful.
People are so nice.
That's wonderful.
That's
very fortunate.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then a compassion intention could be something like, may I accept myself as I am? So that we're not turning against parts of ourselves with an internal critic, but learning to really accept ourselves as we are. Or, you know, may I practice courage and presence in the face of pain? Those kinds of things.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's see where we're doing on time. I'm going to just send the people in the rooms a note that they've got 2 more minutes. All right, so those of you who are here, some of them came back. Those of you who are here, any other thoughts or questions around intention or how to practice it or anything else? Okay. So I was going to lead you in another meditation practice, and I'm going to get down a system where if I'm sending folks off to groups, those of us who stay, I'll lead us in a practice. I think that'd be nice, but my timing was off tonight, so it's already 8:58, so they're coming back in 1 minute, so we don't really have time to do much of a practice. It's nice to be here with you. It's interesting to think about, speaking of intentions, about what our life experiences were such that we're all here together tonight. You know, all the things that brought us here tonight. There are many Dharma gates. Okay, I'm going to send them home, bring those others back. And I'm going to get my guitar out so I can sing a dedication of merit when we're all here. May every living being, our minds as one and radiant with light. Share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. Welcome back. We're just singing the dedication of merit. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity, may our minds awake to great compassion, wisdom, and to joy. May kindness find reward. May all who sorrow leave our grief and pain. May this boundless light meet the darkness of our sacred night. Because our hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.